You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks, joined by my co-host Rob Rang. Whether you're a regular listener or this is your first time giving our show a shot, glad to have you tuning in for our Monday episode. The Seahawks have been done for a few weeks now, but we're officially in all-out off-season mode with the 2020 season in the books, the Buccaneers beating the Chiefs in the Super Bowl to bring home their second Lombardi Trophy in franchise history. We're going to be devising an offensive blueprint to get the Seahawks back to the Super Bowl next February. Really looking forward to some back and forth between me and Rob as we discuss our thoughts on how this team can get back to the big game. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks, snagging arguably the most prestigious award in the NFL aside from a Lombardi Trophy or an MVP trophy, Russell Wilson was officially named the 2020 Walter Payton Man of the Year Award winner on Saturday. Rob, we talk about Wilson's greatness a lot on this show. Understandably, 267 career touchdown passes, 7 Pro Bowls, an All-Pro selection, one of only 2 quarterbacks ever to play the game with 30,000 passing yards and 4,000 rushing yards. We can keep naming off his accomplishments on the field. But when he looks back at his career someday, this might be the one honor he's most proud of, and for good reason.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, in my opinion, is the most prestigious award that a player in the NFL can receive. I certainly recognize that MVP, is a phenomenal testament to a player's ability on the field. But let's be clear. I mean, they're not going to just hand this award just to somebody who's a charity pusher that isn't always also an absolute superstar. At the same time, I also think that it's really important just to kind of acknowledge not only what Russell Wilson has done on the field, of course, but also how much that he's done off the field, especially in 2020, especially with everything that we saw. Everybody's going to focus in on the pandemic and, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement and, the idea of working for charities, the idea of working with Seattle Children's Hospital, all the different things that Russell Wilson did. But again, especially this year with all the different challenges that he had, I just thought that it was an incredible testament to Wilson's character on and off the field, his commitment to everything in the community. To me, it's a fantastic award. I love that the NFL does it. I love that Russell Wilson earned it in 2020. I love that the only other Seahawk in franchise history to get this award was the incomparable Steve Largent. Russell Wilson deserves all the credit for earning this award. And that is the key thing here, is he absolutely did earn this award.
Yeah, he did. And we talk about it time and time again on here, just what kind of a person Russell Wilson is. And obviously, there were fans out there that were not happy with the way that he played in the second half of the season. But when you look at what's really important, Russell Wilson has aced this throughout his NFL career. And what really jumped out to me was his speech when he received the award. And obviously they had to do it differently this year. They couldn't have a live NFL honors show because of the pandemic, but they did some pre-recorded stuff. Calais Campbell, the 2019 winner, passing off the torch, new Walter Payton Man of the Year Award winner, Russell Wilson. And he was talking about how Walter Payton was one of his father Harrison's favorite athletes and how he's got to be smiling down from the heavens above at what he's been able to accomplish off the field. And I can go through this list here and I'm sure I will miss some things. That's the type of person we're talking about with Russell Wilson. He has visited over 600 patients at the Seattle Children's Hospital. He's been doing that on Tuesdays since he entered the league. That is something that he started immediately once the Seahawks drafted him. In March, through the Seattle Food Lifeline, he and Sierra donated 1 million meals to struggling families, and this was the start of the pandemic. This was a big deal. He worked with the aviation company Wheels Up to put some food on the table for those that lost jobs and had schools that were closed during the crisis, and they had over 47 million meals up to this point that they generated with that company through Feeding America. His Why Not You Foundation partnered with the United Way, the Rockefeller Foundation, and DoorDash to expand the Ride United program, which was offering food and valuable supplies to vulnerable families. And they served over 1 million deliveries to 175 plus communities through that pilot program. And so I could just keep going and going and going. But Russell Wilson and his wife, Sierra, just have continued to do a phenomenal job of not only impacting those in the community here in the Seattle area, but their reach is much wider than that. We are talking about a national and global effort by these two to really get involved and help people during the most challenging year of our lives.
Yeah, exactly. And I love that you mentioned his father, Harrison. You know, I mean, that's the thing is that this is something that the Why Not You network is something that Russell Wilson's father and his mother, Tammy, that they instilled in Russell and his siblings at an early age. And the fact that they did name the organization, the Why Not You organization, after what basically his father had kind of preached to him before he passed away due to diabetes years ago, it to me is just the all the more indication of that this is truly what is in Russell Wilson's heart, that he has been trying to do this, he's been successfully doing this throughout his entire time in Seattle, as you said. I mean, this is not somebody who became a superstar, knows the cameras are now on him, and is now trying to make himself look good. I mean, this is where his heart has been since the first time that he, you know, stepped foot in Seattle and created this organization before he probably ever met Sierra, you know. And so that's the thing is that I think it's easy for people to, to give credit to folks who, you know, find the limelight and are able to be articulate and handsome or beautiful or whatever when the stage is on them. But as you said, I mean, he's basically been going to Seattle Children's Hospital every single Tuesday during the season or without, you know, since he stepped forth in Seattle. And that is just a remarkable testament to, again, just his kind of charitable foundations, the idea of just helping others, regardless of whether they're in the Seattle community or all across the country, all across the world, really is a testament to what is right about our society right now, right, when so many people have been focusing on what's wrong.
We know Russell Wilson's a fantastic football player, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, and he has been for several years, but he's an even better human being. And you look forward to 2021, you know he's going to continue to make a difference. He and Sierra have the Why Not You Academy that's going to be launching later this year in Des Moines, Washington. It's a tuition-free charter school that they're going to be aiming to have reimagined education through mentor-based programs for the community. And so again, just another way that Russell Wilson and Sierra are impacting those in the community on a positive note. And so Russell, I don't know if you listen to Locked On Seahawks, but we greatly appreciate you in the Seattle media for everything that you do and will continue to do both on and off the field. Coming up next in the second quarter, we are going to be taking part in our latest mock draft Monday simulation. I asked you, the listeners today on social media, to come up with some interesting mock drafts that had some strict requirements to them. We got some really interesting responses back. Looking forward to combing through three or four of those drafts here in the second quarter. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Football season may be over, but plenty of great sports action is coming soon with the NBA season underway, March Madness on tap, and Major League Baseball closing in on spring training. There's only one place that has you covered and one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Monday episode, my co-host Rob Rang. We're covering everything you need to know about the Seahawks, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. It's Mock Draft Monday. Last week we kicked off this. We love doing this program throughout the off season because it really provides an opportunity for us to look at a variety of different prospects that may be on the radar for the Seahawks heading into draft season. And what I really love about this, Rob, is once we get past the first couple Mondays, we start to add some specifics to make it a little bit tougher on our listeners. And we made today a bit challenging for those that listen regularly to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. There are some strict rules to the mock drafts today. You had to have all four of Seattle's native picks. You could not trade them away. No trade downs, no trade ups, no swapping picks. You had to pick a player with all four of those selections. The only way you could add a pick was by trading a current player. And I'll admit, most of you did not say who you traded to get that pick, but we'll cut you some slack on this particular example. But first one we've got here, Rob, is from Go Hawks Germany, and this was done through the Pro Football Focus mock draft. And the Seahawks are going with a running back with their second-round selection. We're seeing a lot of this in mock drafts right now. It's apparent that fans view the running back position is a pretty significant need entering this draft.
Well, yeah, which is understandable, of course. Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde, both free agents. If Seattle is unable to retain either of those, knowing that Rashad Penny is coming off of the torn ACL, then, yeah, I absolutely agree that running back is a huge position of concern. When you look at this particular PFF mock draft by Go Hawks Germany, starts off with the Clemson running back Travis Etienne right off the top. And I think that if Etienne is available to Seattle with their second round selection, then I think that would make a lot of sense. This is a back who has incredible production throughout his entire career, is leaving Clemson as the all-time leading rusher, all-time touchdown scorer in ACC history. Obviously as a national champion, what I like most about him is the fact that Etienne was a very durable player, and that one of the reasons why he came back for his senior season is the fact that the NFL teams kind of criticized him a little bit and said, hey, you are not the receiver out of the backfield that you need to be successful in today's modern NFL. And he wound up being a terrific receiver this past year for the Clemson Tigers. So that just really is a testament not only to his talent, but his work ethic as well. That seems appropriate considering how much we just talked about Russell Wilson in the first quarter about, kind of being a person that can do everything. That Travis Etienne is the type of running back that can do everything for an NFL offense.
I will be surprised if he's there at pick number 56 for the Seahawks, because I do think that he's a player that's going to be in contention to potentially be picked late first round. He definitely could be available in the second, but I think by pick 56, this is a bit of a long shot. That being said, as you mentioned, there are some scouts out there that haven't been quite as favorable when it comes to evaluating him the last couple of years. I do think he made tremendous strides as a receiver. Pass protection is still an area I'm a little bit iffy on, but you want to talk about a guy that's got some explosiveness. When he gets to the second level, he can take it to the distance. He can run between the tackles. You mentioned the durability aspect. He's got the ability to bounce off guys a little bit. Not a truck stick running back, but certainly capable of breaking tackles. So he would be a guy that would make a lot of sense, especially if they're going to be running more outside zone, more under center. I actually could see him kind of like Rashad Penny being a good fit in that particular scheme. At pick 128, the Seahawks snagging a corner out of California, Cameron Bynum. And I know this is a player that you have been pretty high on in this draft process that fits what the Seahawks typically look for at the corner position.
Yeah, Cam Bynum is a heck of a player. He is not a guy who is going to run, I don't believe, particularly well. And so because of that, I think that he may be available at this spot in the draft. But you think about some of the other corners that Seattle have drafted over the years. They have not always had, been fleet of foot. They've been more long and productive as terms of, ball skills and intercepting. And that's exactly what Bynum is. This is a really productive football player. He was a four-year starter, I believe, for Justin Wilcox at Cal. Justin Wilcox, of course, was previously the defensive coordinator at the University of Washington. Seattle is going to know him very well. Bynum is a physical player. He's a dependable player, kind of like we mentioned before with Etienne in terms of durability and in toughness. But because, again, that he's not going to work out so well, I do think that he might be available. To me, he is one of several long-arm corners in this draft class, Corbin, that I think really scream Seahawks. So I think this would be another good selection for them. At the same time, while I am going to be, you know, kind of effusive in my praise about the first two selections, the next pick, Alec Lindstrom, the center from Boston College, actually, I believe is returning to Boston College. Now, he'd be a great fit. Yep. It'd be a great fit for the Seahawks. I mean, I think we both agree the interior offensive line is a position of concern. And Alex Lindstrom is the younger brother of Chris Lindstrom, who wound up being a first-round selection of the Atlanta Falcons a couple of years ago. I do think Alec is a great player. At the same time, he is not likely to be available in this draft class. And so I think that Seattle would have to look for somebody else at that position.
And pick number 209 in this mock draft, this is a player that I don't think is going to be available at this point, although I suppose it's possible because this is another very loaded receiver class in 2021. Shai Smith out of South Carolina had a pretty darn good week at the Senior Bowl. What is going to hurt him is the fact that he was not overly productive at the college level. He never had more than 675 receiving yards in a single season, never more than four touchdowns. You saw flashes from him, but you want to talk about a player that has been hurt by quarterback play at the college level. Shai Smith is certainly one of those players. He's a smaller guy that's had a few injuries that have cost him some games as well, but he's a savvy route runner. He's tough at his size. He's got explosiveness. He's quick out of his breaks. He is a player that I think would make a lot of sense as a potential number three receiver behind DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett.
No, I agree with you. 5'10", 190 pounds. He is not the biggest guy, but at the same time, he does have electric quickness. He's got good, strong hands. You know, he does make some big plays. Made some flashy plays in the Senior Bowl practices as well as the game itself. So, you know, to me, he's the type of intriguing player that that if you're able to get in on day three, that makes a lot of sense. I agree with you, Corbin. I don't think that he's necessarily going to be here that late. But again, as you mentioned, this is a really good wide receiver class. There's going to be some diamond in the rough candidates that are going to be available to Seattle and other NFL clubs on day three at the receiver position. Smith, I think that he is likely to be there in day three. I just don't know he's going to be there quite this late.
Looking at our next mock draft here from Bill Alfstad, who you and I both have had communication with on social media. He has his own Seahawks podcast, well-informed on the team. And another mock draft with a running back going at 56, Javonte Williams. We talked about a lot last week, so we're not going to dive too much into him. But I'm really intrigued by the pick that was made at number 104, which was acquired by trading a player away. Bill did not tell us who the player was that he moved to get this pick. But Quinn Meinerz out of Wisconsin Whitewater, you and I have talked about him a few times already on the podcast. 320 pounds. He's nasty. He's physical at the point of attack. And you want to talk about a player that might have been the MVP of the Senior Bowl week on the practice field. And there were reports surfacing he was playing with a cracked bone in one of his hands. Did not seem to matter. He just kept going out there and mauling people. This is my favorite term for offensive linemen. He is an ornery guard or center. He just loves to mix it up in the trenches. And I actually like him best at guard. So this would intrigue me. Pick 104 here. If you can get Meinerz and make him your left guard in the future along with Damian Lewis, you might be set for the next 7, 8, 9-plus seasons in the interior of your offensive line. He is a small school prospect, which the Seahawks have not been interested in the Pete Carroll era, particularly in the offensive line. But Meinerz might change that logic with how he looked against other top seniors in Mobile.
Exactly. And that's the reason why I think that he does have a chance to be a Seahawk, because as you just said, Corbin, I mean, the way that he performed, even as a small school player going into the Senior Bowl and really being able to kind of push around some of the big boys. And I just like his personality. I mean, not only is he ornery, but he also kind of wore his jersey, as a lot of people have talked about, you know, kind of the Ezekiel Elliott style. You're not going to see many 315, 320 pound offensive linemen who are going to intentionally bring their jersey levels up to kind of show off the belly and all that kind of stuff. And this is a guy who is trying to bring attention to himself. You don't usually see interior offensive linemen doing that, especially that guy's coming from the small school level. But it's almost like through his actions, he wanted that attention and then had a terrific week of practice as well as the game itself. I don't know that he was quite as good as all the hype out there. But at the same time, he definitely is a physical blocker. So to me, he's going to be an interesting combination of the new scheme that we're kind of expecting Graham is going to be bringing to Seattle, as well as what you've already had with Mike Solari in terms of being a big physical guy as well. I think the combination of the two, you're going to look for a guy who's a little bit light on his feet and can adjust in space, as well as being kind of, as you said, an ornery physical mauling type. That is Quinn Meinerz. You can see it on the tape of the Senior Bowl. You certainly saw it on tape, at Wisconsin Whitewater. He's an interesting player, a guy that I think would make a lot of sense for the Seahawks in the middle rounds.
Looking at the last three picks that Bill made, at number 123, Seth Williams out of Auburn, that would be an interesting player to couple up with DK Metcalf, because we're talking about a player that comes in at around 225 pounds. He's 6'2", so this is a big-bodied receiver, your typical X in the NFL, and he's got really soft hands. He's a guy that will go up and get the football, and what I like most when I've watched Auburn on tape is Seth Williams is fearless. He will go into the middle of the field and he will challenge for the football in contested situations, and he will come down with the football when he's getting blasted. And so you can't question the toughness. He is a guy that I'm going to be very curious to see what his running numbers look like at Auburn's pro day, because to me, that might be the biggest thing that impacts where he's available in the draft. I don't necessarily see the explosiveness from him that you see from some of the other bigger receivers in this class, but he has a lot of the receiving skills that you were looking for, and certainly could be a problem for smaller corners in the NFL.
Exactly. And there's a lot of smaller corners in this division. That's the thing is, I think it is going to be big for Seattle to try to get themselves a third wide receiver or a third pass catcher, I guess I should say, from this, either this draft class or in free agency. I think that's going to be absolutely critical. And Seth Williams is one of the guys who is a big physical tough guy. He plays above the rim with the best of them. He can go up and just pluck the football, even though he's being covered tightly by cornerbacks. So I agree. To me, he makes a lot of sense for Seattle's offense. At the same time, I also have the same kind of questions about his straight line speed. I would not be surprised at all if we're talking about a guy in the mid 4.5, maybe even low 4.6s, but he plays fast. He plays physical. He's the type of guy that the Seattle needs. And it's not just him. Seth Williams is the big receiver at Auburn. The speedster, Anthony Schwartz, is another one. If Seattle decided to go in a different direction, that's not the mock draft selection here, but if we're going to be watching tape on Auburn wide receivers, and I hope our listeners are, in fact, watching tape on these players, then watch out for Anthony Schwartz as well. Another guy who wasn't terribly productive, but has that straight line speed that could be the kind of guy that the Seahawks were hoping they would have a Philip Dorsett.
And Bill doubled up on corners his last two selections at 154, Robert Rochelle out of Central Arkansas, who I watched some clips from in 2019. I have not had a chance to look at his film yet in 2020. Central Arkansas was one of the few schools at the smaller level that was able to actually get together a schedule and play a bunch of games. And so that certainly helped his draft stock. And Israel Mukuamu out of South Carolina, he is not the top corner from the Gamecocks entering this draft. Joe Horn's son is certainly going to be a guy that's got an opportunity to be in the first 20-25 picks in this draft. But this would be another corner that I think would make sense in late day three as a project player that Pete Carroll and company can work with.
Yeah, and I like the idea of Seattle going with defensive backs in late rounds. That's where they've won consistently. And again, both Israel and Rochelle are both guys who have the length that the Seahawks have prioritized in the past. You're right about South Carolina. J.C. Horn is an absolute stud. Joe Horn's son is going to be, I believe, a first-round selection. But Israel was the corner that everybody was buzzing about entering the season. He's all 6'3". He's got really long arms. He is a really interesting guy. He just didn't put up the ball skill. Have all the interceptions that everybody was hoping for, while J.C. Horn kind of seized the command of that defense. But at the same time, to me, these are the types of guys that the Seahawks have targeted in the past. I think this is a really well-thought-out mock draft.
And looking at our last one here, this one's coming from Gary Gom, and this one also has five selections, the four native picks, plus one added via trade. And this one's a little different than the first two, going with an offensive lineman at pick 56, and I think this would make a ton of sense if the player is available. I think Josh Myers has a chance to go earlier than this, Ohio State center, but Ethan Posick, as well as he played last year, it feels like that is still a position that the Seahawks need to find an upgrade. If Myers is there at 56, then I think you've absolutely got to pounce.
I agree. I think that Myers is a terrific football player. I do think he's going to go somewhere in round two. To me, he is among, in my opinion, there's three centers this year, Corbin, that I think are basically plug and play kind of guys that whether it be at the center position or they're sliding outside to guard. Josh Myers from Ohio State, Creed Humphrey from Oklahoma, and Landon Dickerson from Alabama. To me, all three of them are those type of plug and play players. And that if Seattle decides that they want to try and look for an upgrade via the draft at the center position, to me, those are the three guys that you should be kind of considering here. When you look at this squad, to me, this is something that you've not seen Seattle want to do quite as consistently as they did early on. It felt like last year, Russell Wilson, that was the buzz, is that he was kind of whispering to Pete Carroll and John Schneider that, hey, I don't want rookie offensive linemen. I want, you know, some of the veterans. But at the same time, they went and they got Damian Lewis. He played brilliantly for the Seahawks. And so maybe you are going to have a little bit more confidence. If any one of those three interior offensive linemen is available to Seattle, number 56 overall, I think you really have to consider them, even though I still believe that wide receiver, running back have to be strong considerations as well.
I love the next two picks on Gary's mock draft, trading to get pick 123. Brady Christensen out of BYU is one of the players I've been watching very closely. And I know our colleague Nick Lee, being a BYU guy, has just been raving about him and would love to see him in a Seahawks uniform. Maybe your heir apparent for Dwayne Brown. And what I also like about Christensen is I think he could play guard for you in a pinch too. But just to put in perspective how good he was last season, he only gave up one sack for BYU. Pro Football Focus gave him a 96.2 overall grade last season. That's the highest they've ever given to a tackle. Now, BYU, you can look at the schedule they played and all that stuff and consider that when you're evaluating him. But this is a guy that's equally adept at run blocking compared to pass protection. And I think he's a guy that by the time the draft gets here, I'll be surprised if you can pick him at 123. But if the Seahawks can get him there, that is a great value pick. And I also like Darius Stills at 154, the athletic explosive defensive tackle out of West Virginia. We talked about him a lot last week. I think he is a plug-and-play type guy that you might be able to get early in day three if you decide to move on from Jaren Reed. He can go into that three-tech position, and he can give you snaps right away.
Yeah, he can. That's a good player. And Darius Stills. I mean, to me, he reminds me a little bit of Puna Ford in that his first step quickness, his use of hands, he really marries his upper and lower body together very well. And for a short, stout kind of a guy, he knows how to get skinny, knows how to twist his body to be able to penetrate through gaps and be able to make plays in the backfield. And I think that is just more and more important in today's NFL, where you are seeing these quarterbacks who are getting the ball out of their hands so quickly. The guys that can penetrate very, very quickly from the interior rather than from the exterior, the edge rushers, I think are, again, even more value. So if Darius Stills is available at pick 154, I think that makes a lot of sense. You mentioned Brady Christensen. I like the size, 6'6", 300 pounds. He is athletic enough to be able to play at the tackle position at the collegiate level. I saw him struggle a little bit with speed throughout his college time. So I think that he may wind up getting pushed inside to guard, but I do like the positional versatility that he would be able to offer. And again, with Shane Waldron as your offensive coordinator now, I think that you are going to see a little bit more of a focus on some light feet offensive linemen. But I do like the focusing on the line of scrimmage in those next two selections, as well as the upside of the last two picks on this particular mock. Another one that I think is, again, really well thought out. Joshua Kando struggled with durability throughout his time at Florida State, but this is a guy who's 6'5", he's 270 pounds, he's got long arms, he's got good burst up field. To me, he's an intriguing guy. He just has struggled with durability throughout his time at Florida State. To me, he reminds me a little bit of another Florida State Seminole a couple of years ago, Josh Sweat, who, again, struggled with durability, but has wound up really flashing for the Philadelphia Eagles the last couple of years. And then Josh Palmer, another one of those big, strong wideouts that can go up and pluck the football. To take him at 186 to wrap up Seattle's draft, I think think would be a big selection for them, because again, I do believe that's absolutely critical. The Seahawks get better at their third pass catcher position.
The 2020 season came to a close last night with the Buccaneers beating the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. What is it going to take for the Seahawks to get back to the big game next season? Rob and I are going to lay out a five-step blueprint on offense for the Seahawks to return to the Super Bowl next February. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
As an avid weightlifter and distance runner, I'm always looking for an edge when it comes to nutrition, seeking delicious, healthy protein bars without the crazy additives. Since being diagnosed with celiac disease, my options have been pretty limited, until now. Enter in the Built Bar, a low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, gluten-free protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Built Bar now comes in 18 mouth-watering flavors, including 6 new delicious flavors such as caramel brownie and cookies and cream. My all-time favorite is peanut butter brownie, which is 20 grams of protein, just 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs. Since I had my first Built Bar, I never go without one when I hit the weight room or go for a jog. All Built Bars are 100% chocolate, nut and gluten-free, soft and easy to chew, and don't have the nasty aftertaste of competing protein bars. Sound too good to be true? Go to BuiltBar.com and build your own custom box with your choice of flavors using the code LOCKEDON for $10 off. You will also receive a free cooler with your first purchase while supplies last. So what are you waiting for? Change your workout game by going to BuiltBar.com and entering code LOCKEDON for $10 off.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Monday show, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. The Locked On Podcast Network has your Super Bowl recap covered from every angle after this podcast. Listen to Locked On today for the biggest storylines coming out of Tampa Bay. Peacock and Williamson for the X's and O's, and check out Locked On Chiefs and Locked On Bucks for in-depth local expertise. We are officially in all-out offseason mode with the Super Bowl happening last night, the Buccaneers beating the Chiefs to get the Lombardi Trophy. All 32 teams now shifting their focus to constructing their rosters for the 2021 campaign. Everybody with hopes that they can get to the Super Bowl next season and be able to hoist the Lombardi Trophy. So we're going to be doing this the next couple of Mondays, Rob, before we really dive deep. Everyone knows what to expect on Locked On Seahawks. We are going to get to the point where we are combing through each positional group, looking at free agents that might be a fit, and a lot more specifics. But we're going to just lay out a blueprint here, a five-step blueprint on offense today. Next Monday, it'll be on defense. For getting the Seahawks to the Super Bowl in LA next February, that means trades, extensions, free agent signings, draft picks, positional changes, you name it. Anything like that is on the table, but you only get five steps to be able to fix this offense to make it an offense that is Super Bowl worthy. I'm going to start. My first step has to be the offensive line, because if we learned anything watching that Super Bowl last night, it was one at the line of scrimmage. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers protected Tom Brady. The Chiefs, without their top two tackles, they did not protect Patrick Mahomes the entire night. And to me, that was the biggest difference in the game. The Buccaneers were able to win at the line of scrimmage. And as well as Seattle's offensive line play in the first half of the season, they regressed as the second half unfolded and really struggled in the playoff game. I think left guard and center, they have got to find upgrades, but most notably, the center position, they have got to find a way to make that position better right away. I don't know that you can do that drafting any players, especially when you only have one pick the first three rounds. But there are some intriguing players out there available in free agency that I think would be upgrades over Ethan Posick. Corey Linsley's out there. I don't know if the Seahawks are going to have the money to be able to go after a player like that that was an all-pro a year ago. But one name to keep an eye on is former Patriot center David Andrews, who I think would be a nice fit in Shane Waldron's scheme.
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. You know, that would be the number one thing that I would say as well, is that, you know, Seattle has to get a little bit more familiar with Shane Waldron, with Andy Dickerson, you know, who I don't believe is related to Landon Dickerson, who I think the Seahawks might have to consider at the center position, the star center from Alabama, as well as, of course, their incumbent offensive line coach, the great Mike Solari, that they have to be able to create a cohesive cohesive unit up front to be able to give Russell Wilson enough time to be able to have the pass protection that he needs. And of course, that ties right in to my second step in this five-step process. After creating some type of a way where you're going to get your coaching staff and your current offensive lineman on board, your second step, I think, has to be re-signing Chris Carson. I just think that he just brings such a physical mentality to the table that if the Seahawks do not retain him, then they're going to be left trying to replace him with a bunch of backs that in this draft class, I see a lot of guys who are talented players. I don't see any who play with the physical, the physicality that Chris Carson provides. And so I think that you would be looking for a complete different type of offense. I'm not so sure that Seattle wants to do that. And so to me, those are the step one and step two is, again, developing that cohesion in the coaching staff before you even worry about the players, developing that cohesion along the offensive line specifically, and then moving on or moving forward to trying to bring back Chris Carson so that way you keep up that physicality at the running back position.
I'll talk running backs later in the segment, my viewpoint on that position, but my next two steps are actually at the same position group. Step number two for me on my offensive blueprint to get the Seahawks back to the big game, it revolves around Tyler Lockett. I think Lockett has to be extended. There's been a lot of talk out there about the Seahawks potentially moving him via trade. And while I think that that is not completely out of the question, if the Seahawks got the right offer thrown at them, they might consider it. I think you're just creating another huge need that you have to address. And I don't know that you're guaranteed to be able to have a receiver come in that's going to be as productive or even close to as productive as Lockett has been. So I'm extending him through 2024. I'm lowering his cap hit for the 2021 season as well, which is going to give me some flexibility to be able to fill some gaps at other positions. And that lends me to step three here. I'm going to throw out a name here that some of our listeners might be like, whoa, that guy's on the radar here. I think the Seahawks, they need to aim a little higher when you're looking for the number three receiver. I'm not looking to bring Philip Dorsett back. I don't think Freddie Swain's my number three guy. I'm not re-signing David Moore unless it's an absolute steal price-wise, which I think some other teams might throw some money at him. I'm aiming higher. I'm going after T.Y. Hilton, former Indianapolis Colts receiver. And here's the reason that I think it's not far-fetched it could happen. T.Y. Hilton hasn't had a 1,000-yard season for a couple years. This year, he was under 800 receiving yards. He did score quite a few touchdowns, and he had nearly 14 yards per reception playing with Phillip Rivers. I would like to see him back with an elite quarterback in his prime, like Russell Wilson. I still think now into his 30s, he's got enough wheels, he's got enough tread left in his tires as the number three receiver. He can play out of the slot. He can play from the outside. I would be really intrigued to see him in this offense. And I think when you look at some of the other big names that are out there in free agency, you've got Will Fuller, you've got Juju Smith-Schuster, Allen Robinson. There's a bunch of really good receivers that may be hitting the free agent market. And teams don't have money to spend right now because of the cap situation. I could see T.Y. Hilton being available at a reasonable price on a 1 or 2 year deal. If that's the case, then I'm going and I'm getting him. I'm putting T.Y. Hilton with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, and I'm telling opponents, now try to run cover two against this. And I think the underneath ability that you would have with T.Y. Hilton could really change this offense.
Oh, I agree. I think if he is available at a decent price point, then yeah, that's somebody you have to consider. The durability concerns for me are real with T.Y. Hilton. The fact that he's 32 years old, that's real. To me, it's a very similar kind of argument could be made for A.J. Green. Obviously, a very different type of receiver just in terms of his size. But at the same time, again, at 33 years old and also having plenty of durability issues of his own, to me, those would be the concerns. I think that is a possibility, though, in both cases. I think another one that is from the Cincinnati Bengals as well is John Ross, and trying to get him back in the Pacific Northwest, see if you can recapture that magic that he showed when he was a fully healthy player. Again, in either case, we're talking about just adding a very different type of speed element to Seattle's offense. And they would kind of fall in line with what the team has been willing to do in the past with some of the, their former first round pick reclamation projects that they've tried. I think all of those guys would make some sense. Will Fuller, another one that you mentioned, might be that same type of a player.
That's Josh Reynolds.
Exactly. And so those are all guys that to me make a lot of sense in terms of in adding a deep threat possibility. I also think that it's important that Seattle try to find a little bit more of a security blanket as a third or fourth wide receiver as well. A big physical wide out. Whether it be a guy who is a wide receiver, whether it be a tight end, but somebody other than just Will Dissly to be able to be that guy. Maybe that's already on the field. Maybe that's Kobe Parkinson, but you would better be very confident in his ability to do that. Otherwise, you were passing up yet another elite wide receiver draft class. Seattle has to get better at those positions.
And I think the tight end position, you keep leading right into my steps here. Step four, you're talking about a complementary piece. I just don't know that it's Jacob Hollister in this offensive scheme. Now, we don't know what the game plan is going to be. They could do what they did with Schottenheimer, and it's still a 70-75% of our old offense. We're just adding your wrinkles in. I expect there to be more wrinkles than that put in. I think Shane Waldron is going to leave his imprint on this offense. And one of the ways he's going to do that is the tight end position, where the Rams, we've seen what they like. They like move tight ends that can also block as inline blockers. That has been a struggle for Jacob Hollister. That's why I could see, I just mentioned Josh Reynolds. I think Gerald Everett, who's going to be a free agent and played the last 4 years for the Rams, obviously Shane Waldron knows him very well. He is a player that has made major improvements as a blocker. He's not going to be, you know, bulldozing people as an inline run blocker, but he has improved since he came into the league 5 years ago. He is a player that I think you could plug right in. He's going to know the system. He's going to know the stuff that Waldron wants to do. You can move him out into the slot. He's got reliable hands. He had 7 drops this year, but he had none in the 2 seasons before combined. So I think this was an aberration. He has typically had reliable hands. I think you put him with Will Dissly and Colby Parkinson. You have 3 players with contrasting play styles and body builds and stuff. And I think they're all 3 guys that are capable of winning as receivers as well as blockers. Then I think Shane Waldron would have a lot of fun with his 11 and 12 personnel that he would be throwing out there offensively.
I like the idea of really using the familiarity in Waldron's system. So whether it be a guy like, Gerald Everett, whether it be a guy like a Josh Reynolds, I think that makes a lot of sense to be able to kind of pick away from your opponents and take full advantage of, again, that familiarity that those guys are going to have with Waldron's scheme.
My last step here on my offensive blueprint, I said I'm going to go back to running back, so I'm quickly going to go there. Chris Carson may or may not come back at this point. To me, it's one of the biggest question marks for the Seahawks. But regardless of what happens there, obviously if they re-sign him, they're going to feel really good about their running back group. But even if he is gone, even if he leaves in free agency, the Seahawks don't re-sign him. The big thing for me, I see all these mock drafts with picking running backs at 56. And everybody knows I love running backs. And there are certain players in this draft, ETN would be one of them. If he's there at 56, then I'm having a hard time not picking him there. But don't go into desperation mode looking for a running back, whether that's in the draft or overspending for maybe a player like Leonard Fournette in free agency that had a great playoffs for the Buccaneers. Don't overspend there. Don't let desperation push you into making a decision you end up regretting. And the reason I say that, I like Rashad Penny in this scheme. I expect more outside zone. I expect more under center. I know he's had injuries, but I think this is the scheme. If he's going to figure things out, it's going to be in 2021. And I like DJ Dallas as a change of pace runner with him. And here's the guy I'm bringing back. If I'm not bringing back Chris Carson, I'm getting Alex Collins on a plane and saying, hey, let's get you signed up for 2021. He ran with power and quickness those 3 games he played this past season. I like that trio, and then you still have Travis Homer as a third down guy that can play on special teams, can come in a pinch if need be. I'm perfectly fine with that group of 4 as long as you address the offensive line in front of him. If the offensive line is better, I like that running back group as it is.
Well, I think that's a good point. You know, again, if we talk about what Shane Waldron is coming back from with the Rams, you know, for years they had a superstar in Todd Gurley, and yet their offense in some ways became more dynamic here this last year when they were using several different backs. Now, a lot of that is because Cam Akers is going to be a superstar of his own right. But using Akers, using Malcolm Brown, I mean, they really used a number of different backs to be able to throw defenses kind of off kilter a little bit. And I think that Seattle might be able to do that if they decide not to, or if Chris Carson is just too expensive and they cannot bring him back. I think that taking that approach would make a lot of sense. And at the same time, the one thing I would have to kind of mention in here as far as like my fifth and final plan is just basically an upgrade at the center position. I really think that Ethan Posick is a solid player. I just think that when you look at the dominant defensive lineman in this particular division, then I really think that that has to be a huge upgrade. So I mentioned him in the second quarter as some of the centers that I really think from this rookie class that might make some sense, whether it be a rookie, whether it be spending some money in free agency. I do think that center specifically has to be a position that you upgraded this year if you're going to try and get back to playing at the Super Bowl level for next year.
You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Make sure to leave a review. Coming up tomorrow for Throwback Tuesday, we're going to revisit several recent draft classes for the Seahawks and going to assess how that draft panned out for the organization. We'll be starting in 2016 for Throwback Tuesday. We're also going to take a look at Tom Flores finally getting into the Hall of Fame and why he maybe gets too raw of a deal when people look back at his time with the Seahawks. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks.